Part 8. Full Disclosure. I don't believe in a fate that falls on men however they act, but I do believe in a fate that falls on them unless they act. G.K. Chesterton. C+32. McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Early on Thursday morning, Clark spoke into the basement's intercom to let Dan know that he was about to open the unlocked door and come down to check on him. "Come on down," Dan called as soon as the door was open, surprising Clark with the strength and energy in his voice. Even more surprisingly, when Clark looked across the room from halfway down the stairs, he saw Dan busily working at his desk. "Have you heard from anyone at the hospital?" Dan asked, before Clark could question the nature of his work. "I tried calling Tara a few times, but she was asleep when I called the hospital, too," Clark interrupted. "But reception put me through to one of the doctors, a different one from the guy we met, and she said the brain activity and all that kind of stuff looks fine. Until Emma comes too, they won't know how clear her head is, but things don't look quite as bad as they did." "Anything on Timo?" Clark hesitated. "I called his hospital, too. He's had some major skin grafts, and his pelvis is really messed up. He's not getting out anytime soon. I think he's looking at months." "But he's okay?" "I mean," Clark shrugged, hands upturned. "You know what I mean? I wouldn't say he's okay, but he's not going to die from the injuries." Visible relief crossed Dan's face. "Hurry up," he said, beckoning Clark over with his hand. "I didn't want to wake you, but I've been working on this for a few hours."
"And what is this, exactly?"
"I want to go to the drive-in today and show everyone the plaque and footage, like Emma and Timo were going to do at Fiori Frontieri yesterday." Clark gave a half-nod, half-shrug, as he walked over to see the details of what Dan was doing. After only a few steps, however, he noticed that there were two computers on Dan's desk instead of one. He didn't have to ask why this was the case, and he knew exactly what it meant even before he saw which photo was filling one side of the second computer's screen. It was an image Clark hadn't seen in a long time, and one he'd hoped to never see again. A photograph of a much younger Richard Walker, proudly standing next to a blackboard covered in scribbled drafts of what would eventually become the engravings on the two supposedly alien plaques that he and Hans Kloster covertly dumped a few miles from the Argentine coast. "And once I've done that," Dan continued, "I'm going to call the messengers out." Clark looked more closely at the second computer, which Dan had never lied about, and on which he securely stored evidence and proof of the biggest secret of all. This computer was never connected to the internet, was hidden in a physically locked compartment, and was digitally protected by military-grade encryption. For a full year, Dan had taken no shortcuts in ensuring that the secrets it kept would never see the light of day, unless an emergency required him to access the files. Evidently, that time had come. Clark saw that Dan was making a slideshow presentation. A row of thumbnails underneath the featured image brought back memories of the first time Clark had seen these photos, back when Ben Gold delivered a box full of evidence to back up his astonishing revelation of the hoax. One thumbnail showed the famous sphere in which the first two plaques had been found, midway through its construction process, and with Nazi rocketeer-turned-NASA physicist Hans Kloster standing beside it with a smile just as proud as Walker's in the blackboard photo. Another showed several variations of the long, handwritten German letter in which Kloster had confessed his involvement in the fabricated discovery at Lake Toplitz in 1938. In short, as when Ben had delivered the same evidence a year earlier, there was more than enough to decisively prove the point. While Clark gazed at the computer, Dan glanced up at him and tried to read his expression. Clark then sat down next to Dan and slowly tore his eyes away from the screen.
"So," he said, pausing for a few long seconds, "what are we thinking?"
Dan breathed a deep sigh of relief that Clark was on side. Never had there been such a difference between the words "you" and "we."
"Well, everything is on here," Dan said. "This computer has all the videos from last year, from all the various devices we had. Your phone, our security cameras, Walker's cameras, the dash cam we had at Lolo, all of them." Dan went on to quickly list some of the videos in question. The footage of Ben arriving in the middle of the night to confess his role in the hoax. The footage of Dan himself sitting entranced in the cornfield while he drew the detailed map that led the brothers and Emma to Lolo in the first place. The footage of the two thresholds revealed by the varying sensitivity of the trio. Rooster and the resident wildlife. And of course, the camera whiteouts at both Lolo and Richard Walker's farmhouse during the moments when the messengers were present. So basically what I'm going to do first is show everyone the plaque and the footage that Trey shot when the craft flew over Lolo a few weeks ago, Dan said. Then I'll talk about what happened to me and Emma at Lolo last year when we actually met the messengers, and then if it gets that far, I'm going to try to make them intervene by threatening to spill the hoax. So you want them to interrupt? Clark asked, thinking he knew where Dan was going, but keen to make sure. You don't actually want to say anything about the hoax, right? You just want it to look like you're going to say it, so they'll come and stop you like they stopped Walker. Dan sat up straight in his chair, leaning away from the computer. Bingo. I mean, they must have the tech to deflect the comet. That's not even something to worry about. Right now, they just don't seem to have the will. Clark leaned forward, resting his elbow on the desk and his chin on his hand. So if you're only preparing this slideshow about the hoax in case they don't stop you, what's the point in preparing it at all? If they don't stop you, just don't say it. There's no need to get any of this stuff ready to show people. But the messengers have to think I'm going to say it. That's the point. They didn't stop Walker until he was actually on Crab's show, right when he was about to say it. Yeah, but that's the whole thing, Clark said. Walker actually wanted to say it. He wasn't bluffing. For all we know, they know what you're thinking, man. For all we know, they can, you know, read our minds. Clark almost whispered the last part of this thought, as though he knew it sounded crazy even midway through a discussion about the capacities of an actually existent alien race. Clark, think about what you're saying. If they could read my mind, why the hell would they have had to connect a cable to my neck to talk to me? Maybe so you could understand them? That doesn't disprove the idea that maybe they can understand us without a cable. Dan shook his head. No, because they were asking Emma stuff. Remember about where to put the third plaque? If they could read her mind, then why? Because without the cable, she wouldn't have known what they were asking her, Clark said. Listen, man, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying I might be. They might know you're bluffing. I'm not bluffing, Dan said very flatly. If I have to say some of this, I will. Like I just said, they didn't stop Walker until he was already on Crab's show and ready to blurt it out. Clark placed his other elbow on the desk and positioned his hands in front of his nose with his eyes closed, deep in thought, but looking more like he was deep in prayer. Okay, he eventually said. But people are going to be angry, at us, if you have to say any of this, so you have to justify it. You have to be ready to explain what happened, not just describe it. Try to think about what Emma would tell us if she was here. It's message management, man. All the way. No half measures. If we're going to do this, we have to full-on go for it. Needless to say, Dan had already been thinking about and applying everything Emma had taught him and everything he'd picked up from watching her operate. Message management was the term she always used when talking about presenting the truth in the best light, which in this case meant being ready to say, we met the aliens, but Walker's story about them isn't true, instead of something substantively similar but emotionally different, like, everything was a hoax and we lied about it all, but we did actually meet some aliens, and even though we lied back then, we're telling the truth now. So you know what you're doing with this slideshow? Clark asked, rising to his feet. Because if you've got this, I should start with the logistics of getting the drive-in ready for this ASAP. Are you almost ready? I'm on top of it, Dan said. If the drive-in can be ready in 2 or 3 hours, I will be too. The first slideshow, which is the one I'm actually going to show, is totally done. The three people you could call for me are Trey to work the projector, Phil to let us use the lot, and either Maria or Kyle at ACN to make sure some media people show up. Oh, and maybe get some police on hand to control the crowd. Clark nodded. I don't think the police chiefs will be too happy about the short notice, but it'll be on Phil's private property, so that's not make or break. Trey should be home. He wasn't hurt too bad. And obviously, he'll play along. Actually, wait. Trey still doesn't know, man. He doesn't know about the hoax. He only has to press start on the slideshows, Dan said. If we get to the second one, I'll make him promise not to stop it no matter what. But it's not like he has to keep controlling the projector. It's just the initial setup and then pressing start. Clark was satisfied enough with that. And I'm sure Phil will give us the all clear, he said. He's been a grade A shitstick recently with my card and everything, but when it comes down to it, he's always on our side. It's the security I'm thinking about. I'll call in and try to get as many bodies down to the drive-in as I can, but like I said, the notice is so short. Yeah, but the notice is also too short for those welcomer assholes, Dan said, hissing out the final words with a venom rarely present in his tone. And besides, even if there was a real threat, we'd still have to do this. Clark, we have to try this. No one else can. Clark nodded firmly in agreement and set off to the stairs, ready to make some calls. I'll deal with the logistics, you deal with managing the message. Thanks, Dan said. Halfway up the stairs, Clark stopped and called down. This is going to work. Dan half expected a, but even if it doesn't, comment to follow, but none came. Clark exited the basement and left Dan to finish his work. With much positivity, if not quite true confidence, Dan got back to the final preparations.